Thank you, Cheryl. Good evening. So we'll just get cracking right away by just making an offering of our time together this evening. So just closing the eyes and relaxing all the way down or all the way up. Just noticing where we're holding any tension and seeing if we can just accept that. And then from this stillness, moving into our hearts and just making an offering on whatever words work for us to share the benefits of our time together this evening and anything we hear or say or think that would be of benefit to all. May it serve all. May all beings be happy. May all beings be at peace. Om Shanti Shanti, peace, peace, peace. Okay, so we spent the last week contemplating, or I certainly did, I don't know if anyone else did, contemplating chapter one or verse one of the Tao Te Ching. And so I thought we'd just spend the first half of this evening talking about our contemplations of this first verse and any insights we had and how we approached it. And then in the second half, we'll look at verse two and how we might approach that. So I just wanted to share initially like how I approached this week in case it's helpful. So I looked around on the web for a picture of Lao Tzu that I really liked. It took me a while to find one, but then eventually I found one where he's wearing this lovely blue and he's riding this ox, and the ox is very kind looking and has these big eyes, and it's a very colourful picture and very gentle. And I believe he seems to be walking in the clouds, so it kind of appealed to me. So I cut that out or printed it out and cut it out and put it in a book, and then I wrote the first verse next to that picture. And every morning I would just read it through and I would contemplate the picture of Lao Tzu and try and connect with him in some way. And then kind of just allow that. And I found that throughout the day things would come to me. It sort of seemed that I might hear maybe the first two lines, or maybe it'd be the last two lines, and every day it was a couple of lines that spoke to me, and sometimes I'd woke in the night and heard just sort of reminders. And so I felt that helped. I also had got a really lovely book on Lao Tzu. It's like a children's book, it helped me to connect a little more to Lao Tzu, just because I was. It's a bit of a longer story, and it sort of says, you know, maybe this is all a bit made up, and I'm sure it is, but it was a bit more colourful and spoke a bit more about him. So I thought I would just share that, and then I would love to hear how people, how anyone else connected this week to, you know, how they sort of approached their contemplation of the Tao Te Ching, of this first verse, and then maybe share some contemplation that we had, and I'll share some things that arose. But I just wanted to share this with you because it's just so sweet. I know we talked a bit about the story of Lao Tzu last week, but this was incredibly, incredibly sweet. So it says, "This is the legend of Lao Tzu, who may or may not have been born, who may or may not have founded Taoism, one of the greatest religions in the world, and who may or may not have written one of the greatest books of wisdom in the world, the Tao Te Ching, or the Way of Heaven." So this is another translation of what Tao Te Ching means, Way of Heaven. And there are a couple more that came up this week that I found really beautiful and helped me in connecting. So already worth its weight, this book. Some say that on the 14th of September, 6004 BC, in the village of Chuzhen, in the country of Ku, in the kingdom of Chu in ancient China, Lao Tzu was born. And nine heavenly dragons flew down from heaven to wash his body. Lao Tzu's mother had carried him for 81 years, and so at birth he already had snow-white hair and large ears and could walk. His name meant old wise one, and that is how Lao Tzu is translated. And he was said to be the spirit of the highest venerable lord of the eternal Tao, who could harness the clouds' energies, walk on the essence of the sun, and fly with the stars. Lao Tzu was born wise and already knew the magic arts of energy, medicine, healing, longevity, clairvoyance, protection, and transcendence. He could also talk to all of the animals. Once Lao Tzu was asked how he found the way of heaven, and he said, "I made a great effort. I tried and I tried and tried to find it, but I couldn't. And then one day, as I was sitting under a tree, a dry leaf fell, slowly moving with the wind. The wind moved north, the leaf moved north. The wind moved south, the leaf moved south. Then the wind stopped and the leaf fell down, rested beautifully on the earth. Then again there was some wind, and again the leaf rose high in the sky. And suddenly I became that dry leaf, and suddenly I understood the way of heaven. No longer was I separate from heaven, but I was a part of heaven. Wherever heaven went, I went. If it changed its mind, I changed my mind. If it stopped, I stopped. If it flowed, I flowed. And that is how I found the way." Once Lao Tzu was traveling on his donkey when a messenger from the emperor came up to him and said, "The emperor has heard about your great wisdom and wants you to be part of his court." Lao Tzu was very polite but declined. When the messenger was gone, Lao Tzu began to furiously wash his ears with water, and then he washed his donkey's ears too. Someone asked the old wise one what in the world he was doing, and Lao Tzu replied, "I wash my ears because even one political word is dangerous. I wash my donkey's ears because donkeys are very political." Knowing the messenger was from the emperor, the donkey had immediately become proud, said Lao Tzu, "and already is walking around with a new strut." Being a donkey, he understands the language of the court, which is full of donkeys. Eventually, Lao Tzu did become palace secretary in the Chinese imperial palace at Luoyang, and then astrologer and keeper of the archives for the court of Chao. Some consider Lao Tzu the greatest teacher of all time. He had many disciples whom he taught heaven's way by example and silent meditation. He said, "The truth that can be told is not the real truth. The truth that can be told becomes untrue immediately." At 160 years of age, Lao Tzu had seen enough corruption and decline in the court of Chao to make him want to leave and live his virtuous life in peace elsewhere. Riding northwest in a chariot drawn by a dark blue ox, he arrived at the Hankou Pass. The guard was Yin Si, one of his own disciples, who said to him, "Unless you write a book for the good of all mankind, I'm not going to let you pass. This is the debt you have to pay to the world." And so for 3 days, Lao Tzu sat at the Hankou Pass and wrote the Tao Te Ching, one of the greatest books of all time. Lao Tzu gave the Tao Te Ching to Yin Si to help humanity live according to the way of heaven, and then Lao Tzu departed. Yin Si immediately began spreading the Tao Te Ching throughout China. The Tao Te Ching has 5,000 Chinese characters and two sections, one that tells the way of heaven, the Tao, and the other that tells of its virtues, the Day. Lao Tzu traveled through the Hankou Pass, and then some say he traveled through the floating sands of Central Asia. Some say he traveled through the drifting snows of High Tibet, giving the law of heaven along the way. Some say Lao Tzu ascended on a beautiful white stork to the Taoist heaven called Shaoshan, and there he met the Taoist immortals and the heavenly empress of the West who held the peach of immortality for him. On the path to eternity, Lao Tzu was blessed by the three star gods of longevity, wealth, and happiness, and finally by the Jade Emperor, ruler of all Taoist heavens. Though given numerous exalted titles, Lao Tzu is remembered as the old wise one who taught the virtues of softness and yielding, of innocence and peace, and great lessons for everyone, anytime, anywhere. So I just thought that was adorable. and sort of just helped me, as I say, sort of connect a bit more to this lovely, gentle man who was old and wise, born old and wise, who taught the way of heaven. So before I talk about anything else and about the verse and what we got from the verse, I just wondered if anyone wanted to share if they approached the Tao this week, how did they do it? Any tips? for anyone. No pressure. I guess if you want to, you would raise a hand. No, okay. In which case, I thought I would just read the verse again, and then I'll share some of the things I got from the verse. And if you feel inclined to share what you received over the week, I'd love to hear it. Okay, I'm just going to read it again. I'm going to read Wayne Dyer's translation. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The Tao is both named and nameless. As nameless, it is the origin of all things. As named, it is the mother of the 10,000 things. Ever desireless, one can see the mystery. Ever desiring, one sees only manifestations. And the mystery itself is the doorway to all understanding. So this is sort of what I gleaned from the week. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. So it's impossible to ever talk about the Tao. And the minute you talk about the Tao, you are no longer talking about the Tao. One of the lovely things that I love about the Tao is that you could perhaps replace the word Tao for God, but we have such strong memories and thoughts that come along with the word God that it kind of, we're already sort of out of it. So Tao, and I was listening to Eckhart Tolle earlier, and he was saying, if you're Chinese, you're no better off on the translation. It's just, it's a word that is hard to grasp. So I found that to be very helpful in this sort of thinking of Tao more of an essence, more as an essence, sort of understanding that the minute we talk about it, it's already gone because we've made it manifest. And the Tao, as it goes on to say here, is both manifest and unmanifest at the same time. So the unnameable, it says, is the eternally real. Naming is the origin of all particular things, and this is Stephen Mitchell's translation as well. Although Wayne Dyer's is, the Tao is both named and nameless. As nameless, it is the origin of all things. As named, it is the mother of the 10,000 things. So again, I was thinking about, and this is what I wrote, I'm just going to read what I wrote, that might be easier. When you stand in a forest, there is a feeling, a presence, and it feels separate sometimes, excuse me, it feels separate, like it's wrapping itself around you and calming you and you're not doing anything, you're just there. But after some time passes in the stillness, you notice that actually is that feeling coming from inside you instead. And then you sort of realize that this essence is you, and you are, it is the forest as well, and you are one with the forest. How can you possibly put this into words? It is a place of harmony and balance, but those cannot capture the essence and the power. But is there, it is here that this gateway lies. I was trying to sort of settle into where I may have felt this Tao before, and where I may have come across a feeling that was nameless to me. And then I wrote, names come and names go. They're just a word, a label. To see beyond the names is when you begin to enter the mystery. Thoughts are in the world of words. Feeling senses have no words. So it's all a bit, it's sort of hard to talk about this first because you can't talk about it. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. What I found really helpful, though, was to consider that the Tao is both the named and the nameless. As nameless, it is the origin of all things, and as named, it is the mother of the 10,000 things. So within the Tao, it talks about the mother of 10,000 things, and essentially that means the manifest world. Maybe there were only 10,000 things that that had names 2,500 years ago, and probably a bit few more now. And its nameless is the origin of all things, which is similar to saying the unmanifest. So sometimes when we think about spiritual path, we think of, oh, we're in the world of the manifest and we're trying to access the unmanifest. That's not definitely not the case with the Tao. The Tao is saying there is the because manifest exists, unmanifest has to exist, and because unmanifest has to exists, manifest exists. Like they have to. There are two sides, and we're going to talk about yin yang a bit later. And so the Tao is actually the source of the two of those together. It's before even the unmanifest. And it lies in the unmanifest and the manifest. And so to walk the way of heaven is to understand the two worlds, if you want to call them worlds, the two paths, the unmanifest world, the mystery, the behind the manifest world, the beyond the thoughts, and then the manifest world of the thoughts and of the things. So this is what I wrote. And each day I was, as I say, was drawn to a couple of different lines. So thinking about a snowflake. I don't know why I had these things in my mind this week, but it was obviously a natural week. Perhaps I will look at a snowflake and see it as a memory of some other snowflake or some nervousness that snow may be a bad sign for the planet right now. But in these instances, there is it's just an interpretation of what's going on, depending on this which story is more desirous to me at that moment. But when we come to a snowflake without the conditioned mind, we go beyond. We begin to experience a snowflake as it truly is. In that state, we can ask, what is it? What truly is it? But it won't be a word that comes or an explanation. It will be more of an awareness. This is what is meant by experience. And the Tao is very much about having a direct experience. The snowflake does change its qualities depending on whether you see it from the conditioned or unconditioned mind. But in the presence, an unconditioned view, you glimpse into the Tao, into the nothingness, the wholeness, and the infinite. Do not be confused that one is better than the other. To imply better implies views are different, they are and they aren't. So that how we look upon something, whether we look at it from the mind, you know, as we do, this chair is a chair, or if we look at it from a step back and say, to who is this a chair? Why is this a chair? What is the word chair? Neither are better than the other. And sometimes I feel like as spiritual seekers, we can beat ourselves up and say, oh, you know, I'm looking at this with my thoughts and I should be looking at it from awareness. And as this should comes up, the Tao is saying that neither are better than the other. But rather, you know, they just are or they aren't. They're different ways of experiencing what's in front of you. But however, you can make a choice on your path to experience the Tao in that moment or experience the mind. And when you begin to see from beyond the thoughts, then you slowly begin to deepen into the infinite. It is the gateway to all understanding that there are two seemingly different paths. But to walk the way is to choose the path of the infinite, which is to choose the path of balance, incorporating both paths. There's kind of and this is obviously just what I got from this. And then on this particular point of the Tao, it says, ever desireless, one can see the mystery. Ever desiring, one sees only manifestations. So I sort of interpreted this as when we come at something from desire, that's when we see the manifestations in the world. But when we let go of our desires, when we, let's say, come from the unconditioned mind, we can then begin to see what lies behind that. and the mystery itself is the doorway to all understanding, it says. Interestingly, what I loved about Stephen Mitchell's version is he doesn't even call it mystery, he calls it darkness. So he says, mystery and manifestations arise from the same source. There's that point I made about the unmanifest and the manifest. They come from this Tao. And that source is darkness, says Stephen Mitchell. Darkness within darkness, the gateway to all understanding. And when I say says Stephen Mitchell, I mean Lao Tzu, interpreted by Stephen Mitchell. So darkness within darkness, the gateway to all understanding. I just love this, and I'll tell you why. As spiritual seekers, we are constantly talking about the light. And in my personal experience is that I sometimes become beholden to the light. I hear the word light and I feel with like, oh good, it's all going to be okay. And the Tao really teaches you that there is, where you say light, there is darkness. You cannot have one without the other. And so what you do when focusing on the light is you oppose the darkness. And they're just words, you know, they're just concepts. And the whole point of the Tao is to break you of your beliefs and your concepts and to start opening your mind to the possibility of something else. So the fact that he's chosen here instead of mystery to call it darkness, and I've read other translations and they sort of line up with this darkness, I thought was really wonderful. And then I wrote here, darkness within darkness. When I try to think about where is the Tao, where is God, the mind starts to get very churned up and disturbed. I can't find it. How can I reach what I cannot find? What is the point? And then it all feels just pointless, and it starts to feel very dark, like not being able to find my way in the dark. All of a sudden, I'm just walking somewhere, and the lights are off, and I'm trying to feel the walls, or maybe I'll crawl on the floor, but I can't find my way, and the chances are I may never find my way, because it's not like there's a light at the end of the tunnel, it's just darkness, like infinite darkness. But it is in that place of not knowing, that lies the Tao. And that is what I love about this choice of darkness within darkness. It's that you really have to submerge yourself in completely unknowing, of not knowing, in order to find it. And this isn't a not knowing, but I know there's a light there guiding me the way, or not knowing, but you know, I have faith. It's not that. That's what I like about the Tao. It breaks those lessons, or for me, it just breaks those lessons I have of like, oh, I'm now beginning to have this core belief that everything is light, or you know, there's a light inside me that's going to guide the way. And that's really helpful to have that, and I do have that. But also, it's very helpful for me to look at things and say, okay, well, maybe what if I let go of that and just fall into the darkness and become okay with the inscrutable? Because that's really where we want to go, isn't it? If we really want to find out, we have to let go of everything we think and everything we know, and just be in complete pitch black. And so I wrote a paradox of that we always want to be soothed. We always want to feel this ground underneath us. And we feel like this with the light, but it can be a crutch perhaps. But what I feel is that the darkness and the light become like a circle. And Wayne Dyer talks about this in a minute, so I might read some of that. So a lot in it this week, as I say, like for me, I just felt like every day I just kind of read it, let it flow over me, and as the week went on, just noticed what arose. But kind of what came from the week was this idea of just letting go entirely and sitting in the darkness without expecting a light to suddenly shine on me or someone to take me by the hand and say, hey, look. But just absolutely rest in this mystery, in this stillness. And sort of the whole idea of sort of that feeling in the forest that maybe hint towards the Tao is this idea that there is this sort of intelligence that you can never wrap your head around. Like, who could recreate a flower? It's not possible. And when you think about how babies are created, yes, the female and the male come together, but then it's all down to intelligence that you have nothing to do with and probably can never, ever, ever understand or fully grasp. It's just this beautiful mystery. And we don't have to understand it. That's the other thing. It's sort of a lot of pressure if we don't have to understand it. I'm just going to pause for a moment and see if anyone had anything that came to them, maybe when I just read the verse, or over the week, if you were thinking about the Tao at all. And again, you can type in the room or put your hand. Hope, I see Doreen. Is that right? See Doreen? I hope you haven't been there a while, Doreen. I'm sorry if you have. I've only just noticed that. Okay, so I'm going to let go of the mic so you can take it.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me? Hello? Oh, great. So, thank you, Helen. As you read the first chapter, I realized that in the book that I am contemplating and sharing in the next class, there was something about the Tao, and there was something about the 10,000 things that really helped me to clarify, because I would always hear the 10,000 things, but I wasn't quite sure really, really what it meant. But so if it's okay, I'll share just a little bit about this. And of course, they talked about in this book, they talk about the ultimate principle, which is the Tao, but omnipresent, eternal, boundless, immutable principle. And then the next principle is what this author refers to as the universe, as the field of becoming. And in the field of becoming, he says, within this field of becoming, one becomes two, but two things are cognizable, but no two things are cognizable without relationship. With this relationship, the two become three. From the three, in turn, comes seven. And from the seven comes what the Chinese called the 10,000 things, the manifested universe in its infinite diversity.
I don't know if you meant to drop the mic, whether you'd finished, Doreen. Do you want to pick it up again? I don't know if it's a power talk thing. Okay, just feel free to type in the room or put your hand up if you want to grab it again. It comes a bit later in the Tao that talks about how one becomes two, becomes three, how it goes on to create these 10,000 things, which is very beautiful. And as you were talking, you reminded me of the concept of yin yang, which is actually verse two that we're going to be looking at over the week ahead. I'm not seeing you back in the room. So I'm just going to carry on. So thank you very much for sharing. That's awesome and inspiring to stay and listen to your talk next. So before we just talk about yin and yang and look at verse two, I just wanted to share with you a couple of contemplations from Wayne Dyer. And if you have a chance this week, I really recommend listening to the audio on YouTube of Wayne Dyer talking to Oprah Winfrey about his year with the Tao. It's really beautiful. And one of the things I loved about the story I read at the beginning, it called it The Way of Heaven. And Wayne Dyer said what was important for him when he was studying the Tao for a year was that he wanted to learn to think how God thought or how God thinks. And the Tao enabled him to do that. Just sitting with the Tao for a whole year enabled him to be in that place of the Tao, to come from that view of the two, encompassing the two, not the one side or the yin or the yang or the manifest, unmanifest, but the two together. So this whole new source. And Doreen's back in the room, she's having iPad issues. Doreen, do you want to pick up the mic again? If so, I'll drop the mic. Okay, I'll let go of the mic.
Okay, can you hear me? Hopefully you can, great. So I'll just read this one part that I'm not sure where I left off here. Let me see if I can find where I saw this. Yes. Okay, so it's talking about the second principle that is from written in the book Karma and Rebirth, and they're talking about the manifest world, and it's referred to in this book as the field of becoming. And it says, within this field of becoming, one has become two, but no two things are cognizable without relationship. And with this relationship, the two become three. From three, in turn, comes seven. And from the seven come what the Chinese call the 10,000 things, the manifested universe in its infinite diversity. So I just wanted to share that because it helped to kind of bridge the gap for me from the Tao or from the absolute into the 10,000 things. So letting go.
Thanks, Doreen. Thanks. Yeah, and it's helpful because, as you say, how do you get just to 10,000 things? And I think the verse you just mentioned, I think it comes a little bit later. It talks about that exact path. And actually, you know, I mentioned last week, it's kind of an unusual book in that it jumps around a lot, which is great because it sort of keeps you on your toes and you're revisiting things that you thought you'd maybe mastered, and then you're back at it. I was hearing Eckhart Tolle talk about what the Tao is and where it came from and the manifest, and I was like, wow, that's the weirdest translation of the first verse, but it's perfect. And I found out it was actually the 25th verse. So what I love is it's maybe the whole book itself is like the mystery within the mystery, the darkness within the darkness. You just step into it and then you step into another bit and another bit and another bit. It's like a box in a box. But that's awesome, Doreen. Thank you. Anybody else before I just briefly share a couple of these insights from other people, just because they're very beautifully written? Okay. So this is Salala Tower's commentary. And he actually, instead of saying the unnameable is the eternally real, naming is the origin of all particular things, he says non-being instead of nameless, and being is named. So he says we begin our journey with this all-important first step, this first chapter. The journey is, you know, cannot be described or explained, codified or defined, or be put into words. That whole Tao cannot be spoken. There is no clear map. We're just in darkness. The journey may be described more accurately as a pilgrimage or spiritual quest. So he gives us some directions and offers us some guidance, but it is up to us alone to find our way through the brambles and the byways, through the sometimes circuitous, often confusing pathway back to source for what Lao Tzu calls, for lack of a better phrase, the Tao. And he talks about these things, these named things. And Chang Tzu, who we will be touching on, there's a book called Chang Tzu, and it's by Chang Tzu, I think. So, the ancient ones achieved knowledge was deep and profound. What do I mean by deep and profound? That their knowing reached back to before the time when there were before there were distinctions between things. Later on came men who made distinctions between things but did not give them names. That's like the one becoming the two, becoming the three. Then they began to give them names, but did not yet distinguish between right and wrong, and then right and wrong appeared, and the Tao was lost. So according to Salada Towler, the gentleman who did this interpretation, non-being is what creates heaven and earth, the unmanifest. But to the Chinese, heaven, Tian, is very different from the Christian idea, and I love this. It's not a paradise where you go when you die. It is the source of life and is therefore associated with the sun, which many people around the world see as the source of life. When heaven is paired with earth, all life we know is created and sustained, and they are the source and nourishment of all of life, the 10,000 beings. The universal divine energy is the root of all life. It's the root of my life and the root of yours. In this way, non-being and being are two aspects of the same thing. If we look with the eye of non-being or non-duality, we can see and experience the source. And if we look at the things around us with the eye of being, we see the manifestations of the source. So this is sort of captured in the name of the Tao Te Ching. So the Tao is like the source, the origin, heaven, and day is often said to be the manifestation, sometimes the virtues, it's also translated as. Non-being and being, inherently they are both mysterious. And the word Huan, mysterious, also means dark and remote. Its color is of heaven or of the mountain seen from far away. I love this, that the color of heaven is dark. Lao Tzu describes this quality of Tao and Day as the mystery within the mystery. This points to something unknowable, yet together they constitute the way through. They are the gateway to all wonders. So let us free ourselves from having to distinguish between being and non-being and dwell instead in the boundless place and make it our home. And this is reminding me of what Doreen just said. How can we reach this place of boundlessness? How can we learn to trust what we don't see before us, that idea of grasping around in the dark? How can we find our way through a world of so many desires? How can we find our way home, the way of heaven, back to the Tao? One way is to trust our inner vision. It can reveal things to us that our outer vision cannot. It is spending time in quiet and still places within us that we get all the information and guidance we need. The Taoists believe the mind resides in the heart. It is instilling the heart that our mind reveals to us all the knowledge we inherently have. Repeatedly, Lao Tzu tells us to forget book knowledge and instead receive the knowledge that comes when we spend time looking and listening within. This special kind of insight is developed through self-cultivation. There we will experience what Ho Shan Kung, don't know who that is, calls the heaven within another heaven, and that is the gateway that leads to the Tao. So I'm assuming that someone, instead of saying the darkness inside the darkness, because darkness is another word, sort of the heaven from a distance, that this gateway is sort of the heaven within another heaven is the same as darkness within darkness, mystery within mystery. Lao Tzu shows us how to do this. It comes down to what we focus on. What we focus on is often what we manifest and how we see the world and ourselves in it. But Lao Tzu tells us there is a way to birth two worlds at once. But not only that, but these worlds have the same origin and are truly one at source, as are we. Once we let go of our self-imposed limits and cultural baggage, we are able to travel through the gateway to all wonders. So again, this sort of idea that there are these two sides, then we're going to talk about yin yang now, and there is a way to look at the two together. So I'm going to read something very briefish about yin yang and then read verse 2 because they go together pretty beautifully. And the whole idea of yin yang is quite phenomenal when you start to meditate on it, which hopefully if you want to join me, we'll do this week. So the principle of yin yang is fundamental to Taoist philosophy. This is another book by Salada Towler, who's great. So to the Chinese, the universe is divided into polarities. It's not just the Chinese. We've all talked about these polarities, yin and yang. That's what they call them. They are simply two sides of one principle. So it's more correct to use the term yin yang together, not yin and yang, just yin yang. which is a great way of remembering that non-being, being, manifest, unmanifest are one. In this way, all elements are paired and balanced with each other. And the Tao is sort of finding the way of heaven is finding that balance through the two. These elements consist of primal qualities like male and female, right, night and day, sun and moon, dark and light. And through awareness and experience of the interdependence and interrelationship that the universe and the humans within it have, it remains in balance. So originally, Yang stood for the right side of the hill, the side facing the sun, and Yin stood for the shady side away from the sun. And the ancient Taoists, the philosophers of balance, used the concepts of yin yang to symbolize this polarity of existence. Everything that exists can be assigned to either yin or yang, identifying its polar aspect. And then we just kind of get that they're actually one. So we end up with this idea of separateness. I'm a man, I mean, I'm a woman, you're a man or a woman, that kind of thing. And there are some qualities that yin has and yang, but they are different. So yin is sort of darkness, cold, rest, inward, femaleness, the moon, an owl, whereas yang is sort of brightness and heat and activity, like a hawk or the sun, and we think of it as maleness. So the yin yang theory does not set opposites against each other. It actually shows the two enfolded within each other. So if you look, what I just love about the symbol of yin yang, if you can just sort of picture in your mind that kind of apostrophe, two apostrophes sinking together, is that they fit very seamlessly. You know, there was a decision not to draw a circle with a line down the middle, and then, you know, a semicircle of white one side and a semicircle of black the other. That's not how it is at all. It's very beautiful and seamless, and they're reflected in each other. You know, there's the white dot in the black side and the black dot in the white side, and there's a real flow. You don't feel that one has more than the other or one is coming at you more than the other. They seem to sort of meld and flow together. It's really something beautiful to use as like a yantra, if you're feeling it. So not only are they enfolded within each other, they also contain the seeds of their opposite. So yin and yang complement each other rather than opposing each other in any primal struggle. And if you expand this out, thinking about unmanifest, manifest, non-being and being, ego or spirit, whatever it is you think of as opposites, rather than being in a primal struggle, they create each other, which is kind of mind-blowing. And they control each other, and they even transform into one another. They are the seed of each other. It's just, you know, it's insane. They create a balance, yeah. But it's one of those things that is just sort of, you can't even put into words what it means for them to come together, because if you did, I guess you would be talking about Tao, which we know now we can't talk about. So innate instincts belong to yin, while acquired skills belong to yang. In the world of cause and effect, or the realm of the 10,000 beings, yin and yang help define each other and help us to discriminate among things. So we see, by way of contrast, we can differentiate things, obviously. That's how we get by in the world. But nothing exists of itself. All things exist in relation to something else. Again, what sort of Doreen was mentioning earlier. This vision of unity and joyful diversity can empower us to live a life of harmony and exciting engagement. By being aware and sensitive to the battle, the balance and subtle shifts, we are better able to make proper decisions and conduct ourselves with greater integrity. So I loved that. Right, so I'm just going to read, let's see here. So Wayne Dyer talks about this fluidity between these two things, and that so often we think of things as opposites. But actually, they are one, and they are needed for each other. And he talks about flow. So even when we're thinking about verse one, this idea of the there's desire and there's desireless, if you remember. He says that they go into one another. They become like a circle that lead to one another and create one another. So he says, if you think about this, the world in this sort of paradoxical process, think about gardening. And we have a deep desire for daffodils, for spring daffodils. But what ultimately happens is we allow them to grow. There is this sort of desire that morphs into a desireless. And the desireless of allowing creates this desire for daffodils, if you see what I mean. They're both, you cannot separate the two. So think of the things in life that involve wanting and how they differ from allowing. So you want to go to sleep, for instance, rather than just going to sleep, or wanting to love rather than just loving. He says, and here you become to see the sort of subtle qualities of the Tao, that there's this sort of desire or this wanting and there's doing, or some people sort of talk about trying and then there's just doing, and then the sort of two together sort of are needed for one another. It's not that one is better than the other. So desire is both the beginning and the ground of desirelessness, yet wanting is also the beginning and ground of allowing. They are the same and they are different, says Wayne Dyer. So we cultivate a practice of permitting the paradox. So to do the Tao, just enjoy the mystery, enjoy the paradox, he says. And when you feel like right or wrong is emerging, just see if you can let it go. So verse two sort of leads us into that. I'm just going to read it now. When people see some things as beautiful, other things become ugly. When people see some things as good, other things become bad. Being and non-being create each other. Difficult and easy support each other. Long and short define each other. High and low depend on each other. Before and after follow each other. Therefore, the master acts without doing anything and teaches without saying anything. Things arise and she lets them come. Things disappear and she lets them go. She has but doesn't possess, acts but doesn't expect. When her work is done, she forgets it. That is why it lasts forever. So the word for sage in Chinese has no his or her quality. So many of the translations of the Tao can switch between she and her and his and he. So if you're surprised here to see the she mentioned, it's Stephen Mitchell said that he deliberately did this to switch throughout, because there isn't really one or the other, which is perfect because we're looking at the balance between yin yang together. There's a lot in this particular verse. Not only is it talking about the yin yang coming together, but it begins to bring up the concept of wu wei, which we'll talk about next week, this idea of non-doing. And the non-doing arises because the two things that we often separate in our mind are one. So there is nothing to do. So they're kind of interconnected, yin yang and wu wei together. I had a couple of ideas that may help for this week if you're considering contemplating this verse over the week. As I say, it's not supposed to be particularly onerous, it's more like a background noise. I know that we all have so many things that we're doing and studying. So I just simply say, would perhaps suggest reading this in the morning if you haven't connected to Lao Tzu, maybe finding a way to connect to Lao Tzu. Perhaps this week, cutting out a symbol of yin yang that you like. There are so many beautiful ones online. There's one that looks like an owl wrapped inside a hawk, and the ones of the sun and the moon, or you can just have a simple, regular black white with the dots in. There's so many beautiful ones. And then some other suggestions would just be over the week, just noticing when you are flipping from one polarity to another, where you are on the side of you are right and the other person is wrong, and then just observing that you could not be right without them being wrong. They could not be wrong without you being right. And maybe you are wrong and they're right. It doesn't matter. And just exploring those ideas and seeing whether there's even room for a middle way or a balance of this way of heaven. So that was it. I don't know if anyone has anything they wanted to add before we wrap up. As I say, I've got a YouTube playlist if you are interested in that. Eckhart Tolle has a two parts, 3 hours in total. He talks about the Tao, but the one I really loved this week, which I found really helpful, was Wayne Dyer's interview with Oprah about he gave up everything to do the Tao for a year. He sort of called his secretary and said, cancel everything and sell all my things and or give them away. I'm just going to live with the Tao. And he said it really changed his life. Okay. So if not, then I will wish you all a beautiful week. Oh, you could put the link there. Okay, I'll find the link now and I'll just play a little bit of music just to for a few minutes before Doreen comes on via Cheryl. And yeah, namaste to you all.
Thank you.